How could that be a bad bargain? Everything we have learned in Outliers says that success follows a predictable course. It's not the brightest who succeed. If it were, Chris Langan would be up there with Einstein. Nor is success simply the sum of the decisions and efforts we make on our own behalf. It is, rather, a gift. The successful are those who have been given opportunities and who have had the strength and presence of mind to seize them. For hockey and soccer players born in January, it's a better shot at making the All-Star team. For the Beatles, it was Hamburg. For Bill Gates, the lucky break was being born at the right time and getting the gift of a computer terminal in junior high. Joe Flom and the founders of Wachtell, Lipton, Rosen, and Katz got multiple breaks. They were born at the right time, with the right parents, and the right ethnicity, which allowed them to practice takeover law for 20 years before the rest of the legal world caught on. And what Korean Air did when it finally turned its operations around was to give its pilots the opportunity to escape the constraints of their cultural legacy. The lesson here is very simple, but it is striking how often it is overlooked. The myth of the best and the brightest and the self-made man suggests that in order to bring out the most in human potential, we need only identify those with promise and our work is done. We look at Bill Gates and say, in a spirit of self-congratulation, our world allowed that 13-year-old to become a fabulously successful entrepreneur. But that's the wrong lesson. Our world allowed only one 13-year-old unlimited access to a time-sharing terminal in 1968. If a million teenagers had been given the same opportunity, how many more Microsofts would we have today? When we misunderstand or ignore the real lessons of success, we squander talent. If Canada had a second hockey league for those children born in the last half of the year, it would have twice as many adult hockey stars. Now, multiply that lost potential through every field and profession. The world we could have is so much richer than the world we have settled for. Merida doesn't need a brand new school with acres of playing fields and gleaming facilities. She doesn't need a laptop, a smaller class, a teacher with a PhD, or a bigger apartment. She doesn't need a higher IQ or a mind as quick as Chris Langan's. All those things would be nice, of course, but they miss the point. Merida just needs a chance, because people in her world rarely even get one chance at true success. And look at the chance she was given. Someone brought a little bit of the rice paddy to the South Bronx and explained to her the miracle of meaningful work. Epilogue. A Jamaican story. If a progeny of young colored children is brought forth, these are emancipated. On September 9th, 1931, a young woman named Daisy Nation gave birth to twin girls. She and her husband Donald were school teachers in a tiny village called Harewood in the central Jamaican parish of St. Catharines. They named their daughters Faith and Joyce. When Donald was told that he had fathered twins, he sank down on his knees and gave responsibility for their lives over to God. The Nations lived in a small cottage on the grounds of Harewood's Anglican church. The schoolhouse was next door, a long, single-roomed barn of a building raised on concrete stilts. On some days, there might be as many as 300 children in the room, and on others, less than 24. The children would read out loud or recite their times tables. Writing was done on slates. Whenever possible, the classes would move outside under the mango trees. When things got out of control, Donald Nation would walk from one end of the room to the other, waving a strap from left to right as the children scrambled back to their places.